This conference is being recorded.
Okay. All right, so we got the recording started. And let me first start by thanking our clients of Silver Oak Wealth Advisors who have dialed into the call this morning. I think as our firm has demonstrated over the last several months and on numerous occasions, we take great pride in regularly communicating with you. Our goal has been to be proactive by letting you know our observations about the markets and sharing with you as much information as possible through our letters and our emails. You have entrusted us with two important assets, your financial wealth and the security of your family. That's a lot of responsibility, and we take it very seriously. In the last few months, we've witnessed extreme volatility in the markets, as you all know. At the same time, both our country and the world have experienced virtually unprecedented economic crises. The widespread uncertainty has developed into a fear of any investment that has any level of risk to it. Even government bonds have not been immune, as we have seen negative returns during the last quarter on both Treasury bonds and municipal bonds. Therefore, it's not surprising that many clients have asked us about the risk level in the Lone Oak Fund. You may have used different words, but the basic question has boiled down to this: is my money safe? The purpose of this call is to explore that question and others that you may have. We'll begin by going through a list of questions that we've prepared. Your phone lines will be muted during this time, and then afterward we'll unmute the lines and ask you if you'd like to ask an additional question, and we'll be recording it so that we can make it available for replay by anyone who missed it. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce you to the two owners of the Lone Oak Fund, Jerry Ducat and James Rothstein. Eric and I have worked with them for over 4 years. We think that they've done an excellent job of keeping you informed about the fund. Whenever Eric and I have had recommendations to them for modifying their client letters or for including more information, they've readily incorporated our suggestions. These gentlemen have developed a business model that is quite unique, and we'll start with asking them for a little biographical information and an overview of the business. So, Jerry and James, welcome to the call.
All right. Thank you. You hear us okay?
I can hear you fine. Maybe take a few minutes and just share with us a little background about yourselves and how you started the Lone Oak Fund.
Sure. This is James. I started my career practicing law, which I did for about 20 years. During the course of my law practice, I had a small law firm. There are three partners. We had a pension plan, and in the early 80s, a broker brought us our first loan transaction to invest with our pension money, which we did. That's back when interest rates were 21%, so it was a very nice return. Over the years, I started seeing larger loans that we didn't want to fund ourselves, so I started fractionalizing the loans, bringing in other pension plans and high net worth individuals, and I did the servicing on it. So my loan experience started out for essentially my own account for our firm pension plan, and I quit practicing law at the end of 1989 and joined up with Jerry and a third partner. We were doing some development, and by the around 2002, we decided that the real estate market was very mature and we should move on to another realm, so Jerry and I established the fund. But it was our idea at that time to move from the fractionalized loans, and if you're not familiar with that, that's where an individual loan has several beneficiaries, the lenders essentially, in a pool, a small pool, so that each owner of owns a share of that loan, and that loan only. Our idea was to create essentially a mutual fund, which we did with Lone Oak Fund, so that we would have the advantage of the diversification of a whole basket of loans in the portfolio. And we started that. We made our first loan in May of 2003, and this is history.
This is Jerry, and I've been in real estate for 40 years. Started off with a national company, Helmsley Sphere, and dealt with high-rise office buildings downtown. Did my first loan, my first personal acquisition in 1969, small commercial building, and actually have been buying property as a principal investor for the last 40 years, and have dealt with all kinds of property from single family to multi-residential to industrial, commercial, retail, medical office, mobile home parks. I even have an interest in a cemetery. And I have been steeped in real estate for 40 years. I've been through two major downturns in the early 80s and the early 90s. And so have the vision of where those things go. I think what makes Lone Oak unique is the business model is kind of a cross between hard money and institutional. There was never a lender in between. Hard money was charging 12.5 and 5 or 6 points. Institutional loans were charging 6% and 1 point. Excuse me. So Lone Oak picked the niche in between, where we're in the 9% range. Our average loan fee is about 1.5, and so consequently, we picked a niche in the market.
Call Irene.
I'll
be on this phone by half hour.
Pardon? Oh. We picked a niche in the market that was was untapped, and that's been the catalyst, I think, and the enabler for our growth.
Well, I was on this phone at the time, honey. It's important.
I can hear somebody talking in the background. I thought we had the lines muted here, so maybe we don't. That sounded like Larry. No? Okay. If I don't have the lines muted correctly, we'll get back to doing that in a minute or two, but let's go ahead. Sorry, Jerry.
All right. So I guess one of the questions you have is, you know, how do we find these loans,
right?
You know, you want to answer that, Jay?
We have, we've developed a network of brokers and bankers that are referring loans to us on a daily basis. We probably get inquiries of around somewhere between 25 and 50 inquiries a day for new loans. And the more our name gets out there, And we do market across the state. We do have a marketing representative that attends convention, mortgage broker and banker conventions. We've also become members of the California Bankers Association, the California Community Bankers Association, Western Independent Bankers Association, California Association of Mortgage Brokers. And they're constantly having events and conventions, so we have a booth at those, and our representative has done a great job of getting our name out. So besides that, we do directed email marketing to brokers and bankers, and the response has been terrific, so that we do get to see a lot of potential loans every day. So out of that number of loans that we see every day, as you've probably seen from your monthly loan activity report, we fund somewhere between 10 and 15 loans a month. So we really are panning for gold there. We're moving through the sand trying to find those little nuggets.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because the whole banking situation obviously has changed with the credit markets over the last few months. How are you positioned? Why are lenders, borrowers coming to you rather than to the banks? And where do you fit into sort of that marketplace?
You know, a couple of recent illustrations. We made a loan recently on a 60, almost 70,000 foot building in Orange, not far from Angel Stadium on Catella. It was a building 97% leased, worth somewhere between $10 and $12 million. It was owned by a Liechtenstein corporation. They needed $3 million very quickly. It wasn't available to them. We were not concerned it was a foreign corporation, and we made them a loan of $3 million. Short-term loan. You know, I think the reasons that people come to us sort of change with the climate right now is that, if anything, we're getting a better quality borrower today than we were yesterday because the options are not as available to them. Their lines of credit have disappeared. And we're seeing more and more buildings that have no mortgage on them. Developers, others need cash. They're turning to Lone Oak is a viable alternative for them. So actually, this is a really very good time for Lone Oak in terms of the quality of our loans.
And also, the relationships we're building with banks. A lot of these banks are under restrictions from the FDIC that they can't do any more lending, or they can't lend in particular categories. And so the banks have customers that have credit needs, and they turn to us. We give them a loan that that takes care of their needs, doesn't embarrass the bankers with exorbitant rates and fees. And so the bank's able to keep their customer, and when times change, they'll be able to refinance us out.
Yeah, good. And that leads pretty well into my next question, which is really in terms of how the economic environment has changed. Have you modified your process on your loans? Or
you know, I'll tell
you,
we,
differently?
Well, first of all, if somebody comes in, and let's take the worst product in the market right now as a house. And if we're getting guys that are starting to buy pools of houses. We haven't funded any yet, but if they're buying houses and they put up 50% of the money in cash, we would take a look at a house today. We think that's a viable opportunity. On the other hand, if someone bought a house 2 years ago and they paid $1 million for it, and they have a loan of $500,000. They need to pay off, not a loan for us. We would not go there. So single-family homes are definitely on the hit list in terms of, not that we won't make those loans, but they're done very selectively. The next the next type of product is of most concern to us, and we've actually been concerned about this for a year because we know the pattern are retail shopping centers. So James and I were very cautious with regards to the loans we would make were relative to retail-type properties. And as it turns out, you know, the headlines are now being made about companies like Mervyn's. But we actually started looking at this a year ago because we had the benefit. The pattern pretty much is when residential begins to implode, it's followed, and that industry gets laid off or goes out of business or the homeowners don't have the equity to draw down, they stop shopping. And people, it has a ripple effect all the way through. And then follows that with commercial. So we're taking, you know, very commercial is just beginning to get soft. It's soft, but it's getting softer. You know, we look for occupancies that don't have real estate involved people. We stay away from retail centers that have home furnishings related. You know, like the building we just funded, it was all professional, small tenants, you know, multiple tenants in the 70,000-foot building in Orange. What we like best, actually, are multifamily and industrial. Historically, industrial has had the least amount of decline, we have experience in industrial. And multifamily has great diversification. Even though we believe rents are getting softer and we're more cautious than we were yesterday. And I think, you know, whereas yesterday we'd use the different, the cap rate, I don't know if your cap rates, our way of evaluating has changed also with the times, whereas we used to evaluate a property, say, last year, we use different formulas now to arrive at a reduced value. And so in that way, we have adjusted the current economic environment.
Let me just add also with regard to the retail shopping properties that we have in the portfolio now, they're almost all exclusively neighborhood mom and pop type centers, and we don't have any big box stores, so we're not exposed to that. So the, you know, the neighborhood shopping center with the small business owner in there is going to have his wife and cousins and everybody else working in the store to keep it afloat. So we think that those will fare better during these times than the big retail.
Great. Just a quick overview, how many loans are there in the fund? What's the fund size right now? How big is the average loan? And what does that mean as a percentage of that?
As of September 30th, we currently have 146 loans on the books, but we believe it's probably closer to 150 right now, so you know.
Okay.
As of September 30th, we had $200 million in loans, and we had $17 million in cash. All right.
Okay. Great.
The average loan was $1,374,000.
Okay.
And the average loan as a percentage of assets was 0.6. The average loan as a percentage of total loans, not assets, excluding cash, was 0.68%.
Okay, great.
So what that, and the average loan to value is 49.38%. So the strength of the fund, I mean, one of the major strengths of the fund is, in addition to our expertise for understanding real estate values, is the low average loan to value and the great diversification of the fund. And
absolutely.
So, you know, each investor that is invested in the fund, you know, they have an average of 0.68%. The average loan is 0.68%, and then if they have a quarter percent interest in the fund or an eighth of interest in the fund, then they have an eighth of a percent interest in that particular loan.
Okay, great. So, and again, just to cover the basics, all the loans are first trust deeds. I think in general they mature in 12 to 18 months. Is that correct? And then what happens at the end of that period?
Yes. Okay. That definitely dynamic has changed to some extent with what is going on. There's no question that there are more extensions than there used to be. And it used to be, historically, up until just this last few months during this period of time, is when we really began to feel it, you know, probably a third of our loans extended for anywhere from 1 to 6 months. And then of those, maybe half of that amount would extend a second time and then pay us off, right? That has definitely changed at the moment. You know, our attitude regarding that is, well, one, we're in the business of lending money. Two, we take a second look at the property, and, you know, if it's a property that's worth $1 million and we've lent $200,000 on it and the guy makes the payments perfectly and he wants to extend it, we're going to extend it because, you know, we think that the value is there. All right.
You've already done the due diligence on him. You're looking at the values
right.
again.
And, you know, the guy's got a track record and he's a good borrower. He's a good guy. We'd still like the property. There's no change. I mean, it has not impacted by this. It also has to do with the kind of property. You know, if it's an apartment building, we're more comfortable than if it were, if we made a loan on a single family home, we're leaning all over them about a year ago. I mean, that we're definitely doing. So what we're doing is that with those loans that don't, the loans that are not paying off, and there certainly are more than they used to be, is we are leaning very heavily on these people to pay us off or reduce the loan amount. And our weapon for that, the arrow in our quiver, is our default rate, or what we call our maturity rate. which ranges from anywhere from 18 to 24%, depending on the loan. And so we say, look, we're not going to extend the loan formally. You're accruing interest at 18 to 24%. And if you give us a pay down, then we'll extend it. And so that's what's happening. Or you allow us to cross some other property as abundant
additional, more collateral, you're saying.
Right. And so we are leaning. Our attitude is that all our borrowers have at least a little bit of oil in their can, and we are taking the position that we want whatever is oil in that can. We want those few drops to come to Lone Oak, and so we squeak very loudly. You know, we spent the 5 years marketing as good guys, and unfortunately, I think there are some borrowers. We had a conversation yesterday. A borrower came in for the second time. He makes his payments. We just feel uncomfortable with the loan amount now in this climate. And well located, Pico and Doheny?
Beverly.
Pico and Beverly. And made his payments. Good guy, you know. But we just want to pay down. It's retail. And we just don't feel that it's good. And he said, well, you know, I've been talking to some of your investors. They can't believe you're being so tough on me. And James and I were thinking, yeah, our investors are really, you know, we don't know what the investors said to him, but we know what they were thinking. Go get them, guys. So
right.
we are leaning, and this has become a more active part of whereas loan servicing used to be kind of a almost passive, easy kind of thing to do. It does take more work now and more time, and James and I are definitely spending more time in this particular area. And we're doing workouts, and things are working out. I mean, it's... you know, these are difficult times and unusual times, but we're up to the task, and so far it's working out nicely.
Yeah, good. Let me actually key off that and jump ahead a couple of questions here. Just talking about defaults, you know, obviously with the work that you're doing on leaning on the borrowers either for higher interest payments or for more collateral or pay downs. What's the experience right now with loans in default?
Well, James, why don't you address that issue?
Right. Well, there's been no change since the report that we sent you as of September 30th. In fact, let's see. The second lenders are continuing to service us. We're hoping on a couple of them that we should be out of these shortly. The second lender is working with the borrowers to get the property sold, whereby we'll be paid off in full.
So just to explain that for a second, a couple of properties where you have the first, somebody else holds the second, and in order to make sure that you don't foreclose basically on them in their second position, the holder of the second has made the payments on the first.
Correct. Standing still essentially, letting the second go forward with filing a notice of default to start the foreclosure process to put the pressure on the borrower. But in the meantime, we're getting paid just as if the borrower were paying us.
Right. So right now, all the loans are monthly payments. All the loans are current. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Just want to clarify one thing Jerry said. We talked about where the borrower does not agree to pay us down or give us some additional collateral, so therefore we won't formally extend the loan. The loan accrues at the default rate or the maturity rate. However, we collect at the note rate. So what is accruing is the difference between the maturity rate and the default rate. So we're essentially current with what's on the face of the note. But the pressure still mounts on the borrower because there's that additional 8, 9, 10 to almost 14% that's accruing. So they could essentially get buried if they don't hurry up and take care of us.
Right. So what's the recourse at that point? They can go out and find a hard money lender to loan them the money to pay you off or
sell the property.
Or sell the property.
Right.
Okay.
Or finally come in and give us a piece of cross collateral.
Okay, great. So again, you know, in terms of safety, obviously the biggest questions that we hear from clients are how safe, you know, is their investment? And, you know, so going to that issue, do you foresee any significant numbers of loans over the next year or so that might default? And would those possibly result in foreclosures by you? Or do you think it's more likely that because there still is a decent amount of equity in those properties that they'll get sold or that you'll lay off that loan to somebody else at that point?
You know, we have always had a pattern of a handful of loans or issues. I tell you what, not having been an operating business such as this, we didn't think to start sharing that information with investors. It really was sitting with you, Joel, and Eric that we have kind of learned our craft in terms of empathizing and relating to the investors. So much of our disclosure, actually, we can thank you for that because, you know, we have our breakfast once a quarter and you tell us what you need, and we've kind of responded to that. But we've always had a pattern. We've always had a pattern of some problem loans, and the pattern hasn't really changed dramatically from what it's been, and we've always kind of worked it out. I mean, it may be a little more going forward, but, you know, our borrowers are responsible, and this is kind of I really believe that what we're going through right now has been an aberration, and that in terms of lack of liquidity, it may not be the way it used to be, but it's not going to be the way it is right now. And, you know, it's going to be business as usual to some extent. I don't think there's going to be hyper increases in values of real estate. In fact, it'll probably be flat if in even a downward trend slowly, not fall off the cliff like single-family homes, but there could be a downward trend. And we kind of anticipate that. If it doesn't turn out that way, then we're fine. So I don't believe, and I can let James answer it too, I don't believe there's going to be any pattern going forward that's any different than the pattern we have now. We are adjusting our underwriting.
Right.
And we adjust the type product type. We're definitely... You know, we've always been defensive, but we're probably even more defensive now. But I don't see any major changes. Do you, James?
No. The problems we have every month, I call them the usual suspects. Out of 150, thereabout, loans in the portfolio, some people, the sweep of their accounts for the payment will bounce insufficient funds. We call them up right away. Usually it's within the 10-day grace period, so they don't incur a late charge. But when they go beyond the 10 days, they have to pay a 10% late charge, which is kind of painful. And we basically, everybody generally comes around by the end of the month, except for the half a dozen loans that we're experiencing problems with, which, as I've said, basically have been taken care of by the junior lender. So will there be some... new usual suspects that come up here and there, probably, but you know, we feel confident we can deal with it.
Well, you know, one of the observations that I made, maybe you can quickly comment on it, is that as the government deals with this credit crisis and creates more liquidity in the banking system, so that eventually, at some point over the next year or two, the banking system will have to start making loans again somewhere. Your loans, because they cycle through over the 12 or 18-month period, at some point, my guess would be over that next 6, 12, 18 months, you're going to see it a little bit easier for those borrowers to go out and be able to get those takeout loans at some point.
No question about it. No question about it. We are getting, we're getting more concerns about a little longer. There's pressure for a little longer loan because they're not quite as optimistic about 12 months or 6 month loans. And having said that, we're making a loan. This is kind of an interesting loan. A guy is buying, a wealthy family is buying a property on Ventura Boulevard in Tarzana. You may know it. It has a Michaels on it.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's paying $9.5 million for it. And all cash. He was looking for a $4 million loan from us. We decided we didn't want to lend him $4 million on it because Michael's, even though they want to extend, he hasn't extended, it hasn't happened, and also their rent is, it's actually a long-term, it's a wealthy family, long-term play. Anyway, long story short, we're lending them $3 million, and they're putting up $6.5 million cash. It's a six-month loan. He says, our bank will pay you off in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And if the bank doesn't pay us off, we still feel pretty comfortable.
Right.
Let's
just talk a little bit about the liquidity of the fund. You know, part of what typically you have subscription money, new people coming into the fund, that new subscription money gets parked into a subscription account, so there's liquidity in there. And I think between that liquidity and the loans as they get paid off, you have a pool of money that you're able to liquidate current Lone Oak Fund investors should they wish to, you know, pull their money out of the fund. How do you see that liquidity, you know, over the next 6 or 12 months, and as far as any of our clients, you know, just being concerned about whether, if they did want to get out, having the ability to ask you for funds and a liquidation?
Well, first of all, the operating agreement provides that first cash in the fund is used for redemptions. So if we have a loan and we have redemptions, the money has to go to the redemptions first. All right?
Okay.
Now, let's just take September 30th as an example, since I have that available in front of me. In September, we had just a little shy of $8 million in loans paid off. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, in addition to that, I think at that time, and we had about $20 million in the fund. Was that what we had?
Well,
there?
We had
a little. Oh, I can tell you exactly. Actually, I can tell you exactly. I've got the statement here. Hold on just a second. We had $17 million in cash. We had $17 million in cash as of September 30th. To put that in perspective, we had $8 million pay off, but we funded almost $12 million. So if we hadn't funded the $12 million, then you would have the $8 million. You would have found that we had $8 and the $17. So, well, it's not exactly that right, but you had over $20 million in cash available for redemptions. And that's pretty much the pattern. We have loans pay off every month. I mean, September was, talk about a crunchy month for loans to pay off. How about September of this year? Probably the worst month in the history. You know, and October will probably be bad, but we have loans paying off in October. And so, you know, now, if there is a run on the bank, then, you know, it'll be just the orderly first demand in, first demand out, and loans will pay off. But the reality of it is we've had very small percent, only a handful of people redeemed. And so a couple of them then were in the real estate business and they needed cash. A good, very close friend of mine who's been in the fund for very beginning had about $1.5 million in the fund. He's buying a building for his business in Marina Del Rey, and he couldn't get a loan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said it just wasn't available. He had to get this thing closed. So he took the money out of the fund. He apologized. He called me up. He says, Jerry, you know, I know you. We've been friends and partners for off and on for years, but I just need some cash. And there was another fellow that took out about $1.7 million. I don't know the story of him. Do you know?
No, we don't.
But he left in $550,000 in the fund.
Right.
So
now, our investors typically have generally between $100,000 and $250,000, maybe as much as $300,000 in the fund. But so they're you know, much smaller compared to that.
They're not going to be an issue, Joel.
Okay.
I mean, small investors are not an issue. Even the large investors, we get it to them. We've not had any, you know, redemptions really a practical problem. And I really think that if we were going to have serious redemptions, it would have happened by now just because we went through a very bad period of time for a couple of weeks. which was, you know, the catalyst for our letter, which
was right, a couple of weeks ago.
Comfort. We hope gave people comfort. We really believe in, you know, we're still putting more, we're going to put some more money in the fund. You know, last time we had breakfast, I just put some more money in the fund. We have more money in the fund that's going to go in. You know, we can't think of a better place for our money to be because it's spread over 150 loans, average, you know, good loan to value, California real estate. We know what we're doing, and we feel comfortable about it from our point of view.
Right.
And you know, and we have a lot of people that are investors in the fund. That's your source of income. That's your source of income, and that's a lot of responsibility.
Right.
That's a lot of responsibility. So.
I'm going to open the phones in a minute, but just quickly, for new people coming in, new subscription money, about how long do you think the waiting period will be before their money actually makes it into the loan pool so they get their return?
It should be less than 3 months.
Okay.
It should be less than 3 months. There was a period of time that it was 3 to 6 months, but that time has actually declined was for two reasons. One, we're not getting the payoffs because we talked about that. And I will admit that we're still getting some money, but not as much as we were before, just because I think everyone's a little bit concerned. And doesn't mean that one, that may pick up, but so there's been a little bit of slowdown in terms of new money coming in and a slowdown in terms of existing loans paying off. So that's why we say.
And also the new money coming in are in smaller amounts, so that when we do fund a loan, we can place more people per loan. Gobbles it up quicker.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I mean, one of the reasons, I mean, this is actually probably a very good time and to get into the fund and get placed. We're almost in August right now, and it's October, and so in terms of placement, and we have a lot of loans to close. We still have a number of loans that we might be into September before this month is over because we have, for example, a $3 million loan I mentioned to you on Ventura Boulevard. This is probably a very good time in terms of getting placed more quickly than it was yesterday.
We actually had one new investor came in. I forget which month it was a few months back, but he hit it right at the crease. He only waited 2 weeks to get
in. That's good. Yeah, but as far as new investors, you're pretty full as far as the maximum number of subscribers that you can have in.
Well,
there. Pretty close,
you know,
to it anyway.
We actually can take new investors. We have we have now 480 members because we required the increase. We also, though, are exploring a compression. We haven't heard back from Tony on that yet.
No.
And by that, there is a possibility that if an individual has a individual account and a 401k or an IRA account, that might be considered one account. And we have a lot of people that have.
Sure. Yeah, we have a lot of those, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're not sure. He's looking into it. We haven't heard back from him yet. We came up with this idea last week that it's a possibility, and so we gave it to him, and his securities people are exploring it to see whether.
Sure.
Because you have the same Social Security number, so we thought maybe that's just one. So
yeah.
We don't know the answer to that question yet, but that would open up some spots, too.
All right. To be determined. So that's great. So I think we've covered a lot of territory. I've taken up a little more time than I thought I would, but that's, I guess, par for the course. I appreciate, you know, your answers. I didn't want to cut you off on any because I thought they were really good answers. So I will ask anybody on the line with us, any of our clients, if they want to ask a question. I don't know whether you're muted or not muted at this point, but if you press *6, that will unmute you if you're already muted and go the opposite way if I forgot to properly get it muted. So we'll play with it and do a *6 if you'd like to unmute your line. And if that doesn't work, do *6 again. We'll make sure that
Joel?
You get questions in.
Hi,
yes.
Joel, this is Laurel.
Hi, Laurel.
Hi. I have a question. I don't know whether it's appropriate, but I'm going to ask it. I was wondering Well, what percentage of Jerry and James's own personal portfolios they have invested in Lone Oak?
I don't think they want to disclose that exactly, but
I will
throw it out to them.
But
to
in terms
have
of
one
it, gives
answer.
Me, it gives me a sense of
sure.
their sense of the wholesomeness.
Sure, gotcha.
Well, let me ask the question this way. We have approximately 13% of the fund, of our own money in the fund.
Okay, each of you.
No, together.
Combined.
Right.
Together. So it's 6% each then.
Well, no, it's not exactly.
13%
it's
in aggregate, so we're not... Yeah.
It's 13, yeah. It's not even, but it's 13%. Yeah. 13 or 14%.
And so I would assume then the rest of your portfolios is invested elsewhere.
They have a lot of real estate. I know just from past conversations with them that...
Okay.
Speaking for me, it is.
So, as a financial naif, I would have to refer to Joel as to how he feels in terms of, you know, my sense is that what one puts into one's own business is a reflection of one's sense.
Sure,
of
and I think, you know, as Jerry said, that I don't think they can find an area where they can make as much money these days, which is why I think they're comfortable with having a good chunk in the fund.
Yeah, and if that is considered a good chunk.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this, Laurel, that you know, I don't have all my cash in the fund because I'm prudent.
Yeah.
So, but I have a substantial portion of cash in the fund.
Okay. All right. That was that's my question.
Yeah.
Joel?
Yes.
Joel?
Yes.
Oh, hi, this is Larry. How are you? Can you hear me?
Good, Larry. Yep, can hear you fine.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, fellas. Very, very informative. I'm one of Joel's, you know, modest investors, and at my age 77, I've been a little bit insecure. The bottom line is my interest at this time 100% safe? Hello?
Yeah, Jerry, James.
100% safe.
I think to say it's 100% is kind of, you know, hard to say. Maybe that's why they're hemming and hawing.
There's some
risk. You know, I think what I've told everybody is that we're not getting you folks a 9.5% return because there's no risk. If we want no risk, then we go into treasury bills and we get a 1 or 2% return. But I think you know, what I'll ask them is, you know, and from our standpoint, we think it's a prudent risk for the return that we're getting. And based on, that's why I tried to flush out the safety questions with Jerry and James by some other questions to ask in terms, basically, you know, what are the risks? How likely is it that people will pay off? How likely is it that any of our clients would be able to get liquidated when they want to get liquidated? And I think that goes to the risk question. Would you say that's a fair assessment, James or Jerry?
I think so. And also, we in our letter, we gave an example of what would happen if a loan, we did have to foreclose on a loan and it did sell for less than, the property sold for less than our original principal balance and what the impact would be to individual investors. It's a very small, it would be a very small percentage loss, a fraction of a percent. So,
I don't want to have too much time. Must be other callers. Okay, so I really appreciate. So I do feel confident that your answers were very good. And
Larry, let me just make one comment about the 100% safe. You know,
I know nothing's 100% sure, but
no,
I get the idea.
But the strength of the fund and the strength of the safety lies within its diversification. Lies within the fact that the average loan is less than 1% of the fund, of the total loans funded, and the average value, the average amount of our loan is less than 50%. And at least when we funded them, I have to qualify that in today's climate. But the diversification, I mean, you know, I personally would not make a loan on a single property. If I took $1 million and I made a loan and that's all I had, I would not put $1 million in a loan on a single property, no matter how safe it was. That would not be prudent. even if it was 10% loan to value. I would not do that. I'm a great believer in diversification, and I have all kinds of real estate in all kinds of areas and all kinds of product types. And the beauty of this fund is this is a reflection of James and my way of doing business. It gives the gives not only you, but gives us and our friends and family a diversified investment vehicle that we believe is, and I like Joel's use of the word prudent, it's a very prudent investment. There are no 100% certainties, but this is a very prudent investment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I was just, you know, maybe a poor choice. Okay, but I want to thank you all very, very much, and I feel very confident in what you have said, and I feel a lot better now. So I really appreciate this conference call.
Thanks, Larry. Any other questions? Anybody else still there?
No, Joel, you asked all the right questions. This is Don.
Hi, Don. Good. Okay. Great. Well, super. If there are no other questions, I guess we'll end the call. Again, I want to thank Jerry and James for spending pretty much an hour, and thank you all for the call. We'll have it available for playback for spouses or other clients that were not able to join us today. And I think that's been great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
Joel. You're very welcome. Joel.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Jerry and James.